You're listening to Living a Vintage Life by Retro Chalet. Thanks for joining. Here's your host, Cindy Fanastock-Schaefer. Next up on Living a Vintage Life, we have Thrifting and Collecting with Ed. Let's get right to that, shall we?
Hey guys, thanks for listening. Guess who I have here with me today?
It's Ed.
It's Ed, and I just haven't been feeling like doing any podcasts without him, so I've been slacking. I had a New Year's resolution last year to do more podcasts, and guess what? Ed was nowhere to be found. Where were you?
Hiding.
He was hiding. Well, you know, antique and flea market junking with Ed, you know, he's obviously out there in the summer months doing what? Hitting the...
flea markets, yard sales, estate sales, church sales.
And so one of the things we got into discussing was...
silver.
Silver! So this episode is going to be on all kinds of information about collecting silver. Why would you do it? Who does it? And why? So let's get into that. So okay. Ed, you know more about this than me. And let's start.
All right. Well, I think if you're going to be collecting silver or buying silver, you're probably buying it for three different reasons. Either you collect coins... you're looking for houseware items like flatware, dinnerware, candlesticks, or you're probably looking for jewelry.
Okay, so we've broken it into three categories here, okay? So let's get into the very first one.
I think the first one would probably be coins. So people who collect coins, they collect them because they're looking for a certain year they were made, a certain place they were made. Some places made less coins than other mint places.
Oh, like so. The mint mark, yeah. And everything. Mm-hmm. So my dad, he was a big coin collector, and he would always tell me, you know, look for a certain type of coin that had like a D on it, and I'm like, I can't see that little stuff.
Right.
You know, but basically, you know, more and more people are aware of silver coins and stuff, and then of course there's a whole bunch of coins out there now that are newly produced that my dad had been collecting and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Why is there such a big thing about collecting coins? So it's twofold, really. Like, it's a win-win scenario, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you collect coins for the mint value, you're looking for coins you don't have, maybe some because it's more rare than others, and you're collecting, you're trying to get, you know, every dime that was made between, you know, a certain year with a certain face on it. But you also are looking for coins from 1964 or earlier, because they were silver. They were not pure silver. They were 90% silver. But you always have the silver value as far as what you're trying to get. People buy coins, even though they might not be that valuable as far as the condition. They're buying the coins because they're using them as a hedge for inflation, because they will tend to hold their value more because of the silver content. So basically, when you're going out looking for coins, you probably never want to pass up anything that would be silver, even if it looked really bad. It might not be worth anything as far as the condition, but it always has that silver value. And so you really can't go wrong if you can get them at a reasonable price.
Right.
So you always want to be on the lookout for there, you know, and even if it's got a dent in it, you know, there's no such thing as broken silver. You know, it's silver right. No matter what. And so you can always hold on to it for the silver value. So you're basically going to be looking for coins for the value of the mint and the condition versus coins for just silver content.
Well, I guess you would have to probably research, like, what's an ounce of silver going for? And you know, I was, like, really confused because isn't it, like, a troy ounce is, like, different than, like, say, like, I'm weighing a vegetable or something? I was really confused on this.
Yeah, it's a little different, but there's a formula that you can go by. So you can always use that formula to do the calculation. But one thing for sure, the demand for silver is going up because they need silver for, solar panels.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yeah, and they need it for electronics, like right. computers and things.
So as they use more for technology...
they need more.
They need more for technology, obviously. That's why there's... obviously, it's not used for coins anymore.
Well, there's a different reason they're not used for coins. But right now, as far as collecting silver coins, you want to be looking for anything 1964 or older. And that's for dimes, quarters, half dollars, and dollars. And generally... you know, the older ones with the more rare mint marks are going to be the more valuable, and the better the condition, the more valuable they're going to be as well.
And, you know, it's kind of crazy because, you know, I work in food and we deal with a lot of cash. And a lot of companies don't, they are strictly card. So it's amazing how many old coins come through my fingertips. And honestly, like, I was in shock that people are just spending whatever's in the house and not really looking at it. I mean, a ton of wheat pennies. I've gotten silver certificate bills. And I was like, what is this? You know, and they're either red. They got like a red line through them and stuff. And I'm like, what is this? But the coins themselves, you know, like I did not know. I was looking for Buffalo nickels. Mm-hmm. I did not know 1964 or before was actually silver. I can't imagine how many I've spent.
Well, that's not nickels. Nickels, there was a period of time in World War II for a few years where the nickels did have some silver content in them. But nickels are basically nickel, or they may even be something different now because nickels may be more too expensive.
Oh, well, you're talking quarters and dimes.
And half dollars
and half dollars. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, see, a lot of people do spend those too, I guess. You know.
So all you have to do to know if it's silver is you turn it over on the side, and if you see that red, copper coming through on the side, that means it's clad, which means it's 65 or newer. But if you don't see any clad, if you just see silver.
Oh, right. So when you see like that little ridge on the quarters. Okay. Okay. Well, that's a good way for dummies. Here's how you do it. You turn it on the side. Okay. So that's great. Mm-hmm. So basically, I guess without getting into the whole coin collecting thing, because there are pros out there who do this, you know, and it's very rare. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is even if the coin is, say, circulated and messed up, if it's silver, it's silver. Save it.
Exactly. And if it's in good condition, be very careful. Do some research before you take it to some place that says we buy silver, we buy coins, because you just got to be real careful because you never know. You could have something that's very valuable. And with the internet, you can look up anything now. So there's no excuse not to try to do a little bit of research before you sell it.
Right.
To try to get the best price.
So I'm just curious, like, so for me who still takes cash, there are some companies who don't take any cash. Eventually, money or nickels or dimes or quarters or pennies may be phased out. So my question is, what happens? Like, say I go to the bank and I deposit all this and I deposit all my silver in there. What ends up happening to that stuff? I mean, do you think they destroy it because it's so old, or are they recycling it? Who knows what the government does, right?
I don't know exactly what they do, but they would not be destroying silver.
Right. But they would not probably put that same dime back into circulation.
No,
I would not think.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so either. Mm. So because they're actually, if you go to get change, and you know this from being in a business, they give you brand new rolls of stuff. And sometimes, you know, like it's hard to get pennies or it's hard to get nickels because of the minting and how much they're doing. So if I were to say, take a big bag of my weekly deposit in of change and they're counting it and all those old coins are going by the wayside. So this is even more reason why they're going to be rare at one point, because they're not being returned out. What is coming out is brand new stuff.
It gets harder and harder to find actual silver coins in circulation because as time goes by, people are looking for it more. And when it gets turned into the banks, they will keep it. They won't put it back in circulation. But, you know, there are people, you know, their parents, their grandparents pass away. They find, you know, little stashes of rolled coins.
And some people might not know that these are pure silver and they're spending them, you know, on a pippy sandwich.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, whoa, what is coming through here? You know?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you know, hey, a quarter is a quarter and it's, you know, currency.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. So we have the coins. Now, what's the second thing people are collecting?
Well, I think the biggest thing would be things like silver candlesticks, silver flatware, you know, knives, forks, spoons, serving pieces, silver serving pieces themselves, dishes and bowls.
Okay, mm-hmm. So let's just stop right there. So I inherited a silver set from my grandmother, and I was a little confused because I couldn't find any marks on it. But when I looked it up, it was like, how do you say it? Steve or Stife out of Baltimore. And back then, grandparents, everyone was getting these sets for their wedding, and it had her initials on it.
Mm-hmm.
And some pieces had her initials and some pieces didn't. But I noticed the knives, Okay, so like the forks are one solid piece. They are definitely silver. I can tell you that. But the knives are way too shiny. Like I'm not sure, like, is it a different material that the knife is stuck into the base? Like
Yes, it's so the knife itself, the handle of the knife is going to have some kind of composite holding the cutting part of the knife. The cutting part of the knife is going to be stainless steel.
Okay, that's what it probably was.
And the knife handle is a skin of silver wrapped around the composite that, because you need that handle needs to be strong for you as you're cutting.
To snug it in there, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not, the knife is not as much silver as, say, the spoon,
right.
The soup spoon, the fork, salad fork.
Yeah, because I was really confused because, like, you can tell the spoons are obviously one piece, mm-hmm. and they are definitely marked. And I was confused with the knife, and I wasn't sure, like, is this a mix and match set or is just this how they did it? And then, so let's talk about that. Like, so for a collector, it's actually really old, called Repose or something like that.
Okay.
It's like, it's got a really pretty floral design. Mm-hmm. But, like, for a collector, like, this stuff's heavy, like, as in, I've got a lot of silver here. Like, what am I going to do? Like, trade you a fork for some groceries if the economy collapses? And then what are these people going to do with silver if the economy collapses?
Well,
so, like, what good is this stuff with her initials on it? You know, I mean, for me, I'm using it. You can eat off of it. But still, it's, like, highly collectible for people, right?
So people will buy for two reasons, because they're buying for, like, scrap silver because they're trying again as a hedge for against inflation, but then they use it. I mean, it can be used. It doesn't matter if it has your initials on it or not. If you want to use it, you can use it. So then when you're looking for the silver flatware, the flatware that's not monogrammed tends to be a little more expensive than
right.
the one that's monogrammed. But still, it's always going to be worth the silver value. So, you know, in a nice set of silver, a lot of people don't do like they used to do. They don't entertain as much. They don't have big dinners, at least not with the silver, because you're really not supposed to put the silverware in the dishwasher.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So So you want to, you know, that's why they want the stainless steel flatware.
Plus it tarnishes so easy.
And it tarnishes, and then you have to polish it. And, you know,
yeah.
It's a lot of work, you know.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
It can be. But again, people buy it, you know, they'll buy it for decorative reasons to have, you know, the weighted sterling candlesticks on the table. They're nice when they're polished. And, you know, holiday time,
right.
people have it.
So, and another thing about the candlesticks, mm-hmm. or say the tea sets, I was confused about that because I also inherited a tea set. But when I really kind of researched it, it was something called quadruple plate.
Mm.
So it wasn't actual silver. So, you know, some of this older stuff, it's hard to, like, really research these marks and stuff. So what's your tip for when you go and you're at a thrift store, you're at an estate sale, and say you see these candlesticks? How do you know they're silver or just silver plate?
Well, they're usually going to be marked. They're going to be marked weighted sterling, or they're going to be marked quadruple plate, heavy plate, silver plate.
So quadruple plate is what?
From what I understand, it's four layers of plating of silver instead of one thin layer, which can come off. You've seen pieces that look,
oh, but then, like, underneath is probably tin or
it's
brass.
It's copper or brass usually.
So is that even worth anything?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people will go out, if they're going out to flea markets and things like that, and they can get a really heavy silver-plated serving tray. They can take that to the scrapyard and they'll scrap it for the copper or the brass.
Oh, that's underneath.
That's underneath.
I always wondered why people wanted that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you can get it cheap, I mean, I don't think if you spend $50 on a tray, you're going to get your money back.
Right.
But if you got it for $5 or
right.
$3.
So weighted means it was silver that was weighted with something?
Well, that's weighted. That's different. That's
okay.
different than plate. So weighted means that they take, say, the candlesticks and the base so that they're heavy and they won't tip over and they're solid.
Oh, right.
It'll be this heavy composite. It's almost like a hard plastic when you take it apart.
Right.
And it's got a rod in the middle which holds the candle part. And then it's wrapped. It's got a skin, a layer of silver over it.
Okay.
So it's, you know, and it's usually a thin layer. And you've probably seen these. If you ever saw these candlesticks in the yard sale or flea market, a lot of times you'll see some where they've been polished so many times, you can see like
it looks like different
faded.
Colors.
Yeah.
I've never even turned those over to see what they said because I just honestly thought they were junk.
No, they can be. I mean, just that little bit of silver alone can be worth it if you get them for a dollar a pair.
True.
But people sell them online. People buy them online. You know, a lot of times that stuff, that those weighted candy dishes and candlesticks, they can get dented. You know, so if you got a piece that isn't marked up and damaged in any way, people still buy them because they look really
nice.
Or
like the little baby cups. I see those a lot, but I never know.
They're sterling. They're not weighted. They're okay.
And see, that's what throws me off because they're so thin. Mm-hmm. They're so lightweight. Mm-hmm. And I guess in my mind, I'm always thinking silver jewelry is heavy. You know, like to me, it can be heavy. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like, okay. So for beginners, I guess if you're going to flea markets and thrift stores, you should have that little thing. What's that called?
The jeweler's loop. So you can see what it's marked.
Because I could not even see my ring just now with the naked eye. Ed had to look it up for me, you know, to see what it was, right? And I didn't see the mark, and you saw whole words in there. Yeah. I'm like, okay, so this magnifying glass is a wonderful thing to have.
Yes.
Put it on your keychain.
Well, people wear it around a necklace around their neck, so they always have it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great. Especially with jewelry.
Oh, yeah. And you need to see it because, you know, jewelry is going to be marked either sterling. It can be marked the whole word sterling. It can be marked S-T-E-R.
Oh, or 925. I know that.
Or 925. And you can also get, if you ever see any jewelry with any numbers marked on it, I mean,
I've seen some European jewelry with like eight something.
Well, I don't know if that's on jewelry. I think it might be, but the number for European or English silver is 800.
Oh, right.
Versus our 925, which means, so 925 means it's 92.5% silver.
Wow. And then what's the other stuff in there? We don't
alloys
know.
To make alloys. It, keep it from bending and getting soft. Okay, to make it stronger so you can use it. And then the 800 means it's 80% silver versus, you know, 92.5. So it's less silver content for the item. So, you know, if you're out there looking for dinnerware things, you can, you know, you're looking for what you want. But if you don't want it and you see it and it's a good price, you really want to maybe consider the scrap or the resale.
Right. Now, let's just talk about scrap. So I was looking up YouTube one day and up pops this video, over 2 million views, just an average guy in his garage with this. And I'm not recommending this anyone.
No.
I'm just telling you what I saw. Basically, he has a crucible, which looked to me like the old antique mortar and pestle. And that's what actually caught my eye because I thought it was like something to do with old, you know, medical collectibles or something. No, he had this like blowtorch and he had some gear on his face and he was literally throwing, like you said, it was like scrap junk jewelry. It was broken parts. He had, I want to say he had some kind of pieces maybe of knives. So it looked to me like maybe he was out there, you know, buying lots at thrift stores or flea markets. And then what he was doing is throwing borax in there and he was showing you how to do it. And basically it would pull off the impurities. And then what it would leave him with is like a big round wad of silver.
Right.
It was really interesting. And then I think he had some other videos where he was like polishing it up. And by the end of the day, I watched this guy for like 3 hours and I'm just like, what is he doing?
Right.
What is he doing? So what was he doing? Like, he's making a living part time. You know, he has his day job. Obviously, he's a mechanic or some sort by the looks of the garage. But then he's doing this thing with the silver. So now either he's hoarding it or he could be using that silver to do what? Like, you could make jewelry out of it. What is he doing?
Well, he could be because, so, you know, there, like I said, there's no such thing as broken silver. I mean, it's broken. You can't use a broken necklace for its intended purpose at that time, or a broken teaspoon.
Right.
But once you melt it down, then you can make other things out of it that you can use, like rings and things like that. So he could be doing that. He could also be saving some, you know, as a quote unquote hedge against inflation, things like that. But if somebody, you know, if you go out and you're buying broken spoons and broken necklaces and rings and stuff like that, you can generally find a place in your area where you can sell it for scrap. Now, they're not going to give you the full value because they've got to turn around and make some money off of it. But, you know, again, before you start taking everything in and just selling it, do some research, do the calculation, find out how much silver is in it, check the silver price, do the multiplication, find out how much silver value you've got, And then when you take it to somebody, if you take it to somebody and you find out you've got $80 worth of silver value and they want to give you $65, that's not bad.
That's pretty good.
But if they want to give you $40, that's, you know, then you want to think about it. You maybe want to look for another place to
and
do
it. And
I
mean, really, this might just be stuff that your necklace, you know, it's going to cost more to get fixed than it would be to scrap it.
Right.
Or you bought a bag of jewelry because you're an artist and you make things, but you notice there's a few broken silver pins in there. Mm-hmm. Put them off to the side. You know, like if you're listening to this podcast, you're obviously into antiques and collectibles. So maybe you're buying box lots and there might be some silver stuff mixed in there. So mm-hmm. essentially what you're saying is get a whole box of stuff together, kind of maybe make a list of how much all this stuff maybe cost you, mm-hmm. and then go to some guy who does the scrap, obviously, because unless you're going to be crazy like the guy on the video and get a crucible and a blowtorch, you're probably better off letting that dangerous stuff up to the professionals.
Exactly.
And really, if you were just buying these things for other reasons, or have jewelry you don't wear anymore, and you know, you could make a pretty profit off of it.
You might, like. Depending, yeah, especially if you got it for a really good price. And the other thing, when you're going to sell your silver, you really want to take it in two parts. You want to take the sterling silver, and then you want to take the weighted silver separate, because because it's a whole different way to calculate. I mean, the person you're going to sell your broken sterling to might not even want the weighted until you take the silver skin off.
Oh, you might have to actually do some cutting with some.
And that can be very sharp and very dangerous, so you got to be really careful. I myself, if you could find a place in your area that knows what the weighted silver is worth.
Right.
After the silver comes off.
Oh, like they might know in their mind, okay, yes. Well, this is weighing in at a pound, but 10 ounces is the weight, so I'm only going to give you whatever in silver speak, you know.
The majority of the
weight. Leave it up to the professionals, unless you are a silver scrapper.
Right.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. So this is why so many people are still on the hunt for silver, but you know, what kills me is, like, let's say right now, I can go to eBay and buy a silver ring with a really pretty gemstone in it, and I might win the bid for $10. And $10 to me for a silver ring sounds kind of cheap. But maybe once you take that gemstone out of it, it's really not worth its weight in silver, right?
It depends, because you have to look at the weight of the piece itself. Some pieces can be really chunky.
Yeah.
But some pieces can be very thin and light and delicate. And the lighter and the more delicate, the less weight, and therefore the less silver value it has.
Now, if you are taking, say you have a bunch of broken jewelry and you want to take it to a scrapper, should you try to get the stones out yourself? Like if they have stones or...
Yeah, they don't want the stones. I don't think they'd give you anything for the stones.
Yeah, they're going to take that weight off probably.
I would try to get the stones out of there myself.
Yeah, you can use the stones for other things.
And generally what I've noticed, and this kind of takes us to the next category, which is the jewelry. I tend to notice that the jewelry... The silver jewelry does not have the precious stones in it, like the diamonds and the emeralds and the rubies. It's not that it's impossible, but it's more the precious stones are with gold. But the semi-precious stones, turquoise perhaps, or something like that, that tends to look really nice in silver.
Oh, it's beautiful. And I mean, a lot of people do collect like Navajo or different native jewelry because they really know how to pick the right stones and set it off in the right settings. A lot of it's handmade, just absolutely beautiful. I was huge into this for a very long time. And I noticed that the silver that is used in the Midwest and by these different tribes, it seems to be more chunkier, more pretty.
Yes, thicker.
Thicker, I would like to say better quality than some of the stuff that's coming, say, I'm not trying to be ignorant, but like there's a lot of jewelry coming out of India. I'm not sure if that's truly silver because I noticed, like, just for me wearing silver all the time, because I'm allergic to gold, believe it or not, that I noticed that it tarnishes in a different way. And I'm wondering, like, well, what kind of alloys is maybe different than the States are using or England's using or different countries are using. So, you know, I actually got a really great necklace out of Norway. It's really heavy, really chunky, but it's marked in the 800s. And I read something that that if they were using up to 925, they had to pay a specific jeweler's tax. Mm. And so their way around it was to use a less pure silver back then. So all the stuff you get, I don't want to say all, but 90% of the stuff you get out of Scandinavia, like there's some really cool modern minimalist stuff mm-hmm. that was made in the 60s and 70s, signed out of Norway and stuff. This kind of jewelry, Denmark and all, is in the 800s, but it's very thick and very, very chunky. Like I just being a jewelry lover. But then you get into a whole bunch of people who want the Victorian, the 20s, the estate jewelry, the filigree, and that's very lightweight, mm-hmm. I feel.
Yes, yeah.
And beautiful, but mm-hmm. it's just altogether different.
Yeah, the craftsmanship is very different. It's very delicate, very fragile looking. But when you're talking about the Mexican jewelry, I always like that because it looked, you could just tell it had that craftsmanship, that handmade look and feel to it. And I always like the way, you know, one of my favorites is when they put the abalone shell
in there. Yeah.
All those colors,
too.
It plays off the silver really well.
I just think it goes back to like the different, you know, who was wearing it at the time. You know, when we look at somebody from the 20s, the women were very dainty. If you could afford, you know, this was the Depression era. If you could afford sterling jewelry back then, you know, it would have been filigree. It would have been fragile. It would have been beautiful looking, very ornate, lots of details. Almost like I'm scared to touch some of the stuff. It's so beautiful looking. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like to me, when you're a hand craftsman or a tribal artist in, whether you're Cherokee or you're Mexican or whatever, they just have, I don't know, I just really like their work a lot better, me myself, because they really try to find the right stone, accent it in the silver, mm-hmm. and I have a hard time deciding which is prettier, the stone or the silver, in the way that they set it. And I think, you know, still, now Mexico uses 925 on all their stuff, pretty much.
As far as I know.
Some Navajo stuff I have gotten is not marked. Might be marked by the actual producer, like
the designer,
it'll say like El Yazzie.
Yeah, yeah. The artist.
And then you look it up and the artist signed mm-hmm. it. So that's where it gets really confusing,
mm-hmm. right.
How to tell if it's silver or not.
And that's a whole show in itself, the designer, the artist, because there's, I mean, you really need to take a master course in that because there's so many artists and some are more in demand and worth more than others, but they're all beautiful. No matter,
yes.
you know, they're all beautiful.
Yes.
So you can't go wrong. Again, if you like it and you're going to wear it and it's worth it to you, that's great. And you always have that silver value built into the item itself. So it's, you know, it's always going to be worth something.
Right. So when you're, say, out and you see a silver pin for a dollar, you know, either it's wearable or it's scrappable.
Exactly.
And you know, depending on the weight, one or the other will prevail. So you know, there are people who buy a bunch of jewelry, silver jewelry lots, that are wearable, but they could be scrapping them, which just kills me because then those wearable pieces will be out of existence forever. But, you know, before you throw away grandma's old chunky, nasty jewelry you just don't like or the dainty, fragile Victorian stuff that you just don't like, think twice about it. That's
exactly.
all we're saying.
Because it could have a value to someone.
Right. It could.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on your style, like, you know, that's the thing. Now, why? Okay. So, for instance, I am one of these rare people that are allergic to gold. So I went to get my engagement ring and my rings redone in silver, and they would not do it. So the options were platinum or palladium or these other materials.
Stronger.
Stronger. Mm-hmm. And that's because you're not going to see a lot of diamonds or rubies or sapphire. Well, sometimes sapphires.
Sometimes.
But a lot of them are not set in silver. Why? Because it is...
It's a softer metal.
But so is gold. Like, that's what I don't get.
But it holds the stone better than the silver can. The silver, they're just concerned that the stone's going to fall out.
Right.
And then if you're not paying attention, you won't know where it fell out. And then you're going
right.
to, it's going to be a problem. But so, you know, it's, again, like I say, silver jewelry has always been popular as far as I can ever remember.
Yeah,
it really has
it
always
is.
Been popular. And
still popular today.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Right. So basically, all right. So we got some good tips here. So coins before 1964, when we're talking
U.S. coins.
U.S. coins, when we're talking half dollars, we're talking quarters, we're talking dimes.
And dollars.
And dollars. And we went through some of the marks like sterling, stir, or 925. And then you also told me European, when we're looking at like tablewares and stuff, we didn't actually talk about this, but before you told me like to look up the marks, like you might see a lion or you might see a weird little hallmark, right?
Yeah, right. And you can always look online to find out what those hallmarks mean and also what the numbers mean. Like I said, if you find any piece of jewelry, because the numbers are not only used for silver and gold, they're used for other metals too. Oh. So before you throw it out, check out what's marked on it to find out more what you have. Because if you don't have gold or silver, you could have something else like platinum.
Oh, yeah.
It's still worth.
You might think it's junk and it could be worth more than silver.
Right.
Or, you know, there was also a lot of stuff sold that was, I want to say, what is white gold? Is it silver over gold, or was there some kind of gold plating over silver? There was a lot of jewelry sold back on like HSN and QVC. Because I found this ring and I looked it up and it looked gold when you looked at it. It was beautiful. It was shiny. And Don had told me that they coat these rings with something to make them more brilliant. Rhodium or something, they coat it with that just for it to be shiny. But underneath that gold, it wasn't gold at all. It was actually silver.
Hmm.
So I don't know if they call that gold-filled silver or what they call it, but I was so confused because the ring looked gold. It looked just like gold. I thought it was gold, but the markings told me that it was actually filled. It was a silver ring coated with some kind of gold plate or gold-plated silver. I was really confused. So when you're getting into the whole jewelry thing, like, if you're not sure, just put it off to the side and try to talk to somebody who knows.
Right.
Because I was really confused. And like we said, a lot of artists don't sign their work with a 925 or a Hallmark or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
And one good way, a real quick, easy test, if you have a piece of something, jewelry that you think might be silver or a coin, if you drop it on like a granite counter,
right,
it's going to make a nice ting.
Okay. So what you could do then is if you have a piece of silver and you have, say, something zinc or another thing that you're not sure, drop them together and see if they sound the same.
Well, if you take a quarter from today and a quarter from 1950 and you drop them, you'll hear two different sounds.
Okay. So I'm going to try the sound test, you know, because the other thing would be to do like with chemicals. And I actually see a lot of stuff at flea markets that have like these little weird dots burnt into them because somebody must have tested it to see if it was silver. And when it wasn't, they don't want it anymore. Or maybe they were testing for something else. I don't know. So how do you avoid testing onto the actual piece?
I'm not really sure. I know there are test kits and you do have to, you don't actually, I've never tested it because I just never got into that. But I did see somebody test something one time. They take the item, they scratch it on a little stone. Surface.
Like a wet stone or a sharpening stone?
It comes with a kit. It's a little piece of, it's like stone, and they scratch it on it, leave some metal, and then they take these different acids that you get in the kit, and they drop it on, and if it burns at using whatever acid, then it's that level.
So now you've scratched the piece, but you haven't burnt the piece. So maybe that's a catch-22. anyway, guys, what are you collecting as far as silver goes? Let me know on social media. You can find me on TikTok or Etsy. And if you're visiting my Etsy shop, I don't have a lot of silver, but I have some really cool antiques there. And all my listeners, use code RETRO10 to save 10%. It's not a lot, but guess what? It all adds up with free shipping over $35. Kabam! Oh. And Ed, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you. See you next time.